Good afternoon, and welcome to The Good, the Bad, and the Reality. And as always, we're brought to you by the D-Unity Group and 8A The Easy Way, your fast track to government contracting and federal, state, local certifications. I'm Roger Vaughn, and as always, I'm joined by my two lovely co-hosts, Stacey and Myra. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
On this 12, December 12th.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Yeah. 12, 12, 12. And you mentioned 13, 13. It won't happen. It's not going to happen. We don't want it to happen.
No. But I guess you should go buy a lottery ticket then, right? If you think about it. If it's supposed to be a lucky number, 12, 12, 12.
Oh, I thought the only reason why everyone was getting married was because they could easily remember the date.
Maybe that too.
This is true. I don't know. Usually it's the husbands that get in trouble anyway for not remembering the date. Yeah. So, you know, so well, maybe it will, maybe it won't. So, but anyway, each week we do talk about what makes business ownership so rewarding and, you know, how it relates to challenges of running a small business and ultimately why you choose to do what you do. So, ladies, who do we have in the audience today?
Well, we've got a couple of great guests. First, we've got Stephen Gross, the CEO of Trusted CFO Solutions.
And I have Sonia Williams with the Go Getter Group. I know it as Go Getter Marketing, right? Yeah,
you got it.
Well, folks, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Good to be here.
So, Sonia, tell people what you do and why.
All right. Well, I love what I do. And essentially, we work with a lot of small business owners, but we do work small up to corporate level. And for a lot of our clients, there's a few main areas we focus on. One is brand development. The other is digital marketing. And then a third area is experiential marketing. What those different areas mean to small business owners is on brand development, a lot of business owners think about the web design and the graphics and the logos and so on. What I call kind of the sexy side of marketing. But I also like for them to think about the strategic side when it comes to developing a brand. Uh-huh. What is your messaging? Who is your audience? How do you tailor that message to each audience? So that's what we work with a lot of small businesses on, helping them develop those things. Then we can launch into digital, and that includes the social media campaigns, mm-hmm. developing them, monitoring them for some clients, or consulting some clients who might want to do it on their own, along with email marketing and pay-per-click. And experiential marketing is more event-based. That's just helping those clients who want to maybe, from the small business standpoint, become a vendor or trade show. How do you develop a presence that's going to engage with consumers when you're at an actual event? Mm. And that's experiential on the small business level.
Yeah, I have never heard of experiential. That was kind of new to me. I wrote that down because I wanted to ask you that.
Yeah, it's pretty common in the corporate world.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So why do you do what you do?
Because I love it. I love the challenge. I love that the digital world is constantly evolving and looking for a way to take a small business and look at what's happening on a corporate level. What are these big businesses doing? And how can we mm-hmm. scale it down and do something that's cost effective and affordable as a way for them to grow their business? I love it.
I know. I'm sure it presents a challenge all the time, just, you know, getting that vision out there. Because I love marketing from the standpoint of watching great commercials. I mean, a perfect example are the Chick-fil-A cows. I mean, how long have they been running?
Yeah.
Are the 8, 10 years?
Yeah.
The Affleck duck.
Yeah. I mean, well, really, it's a goose, but yeah.
But, you know, the beauty in it, and to your point, Myra, is with small businesses, you've got YouTube now. You can make your own commercial. So, again, it doesn't have to be at this big scale that the mm-hmm. big corporations do it. You can bring it down to a local level and run the same type of campaign to your local businesses if you're a small business owner.
Wow, mm-hmm. that is exciting.
Yeah. So, on websites, what would be, like, three big things that a company needs to have on their website?
Ooh, call to action.
Okay.
Call to action. And if possible, find a way to incorporate that into multiple pages within the website, not just the contact us page, because that's where most people have their call to action. So when we think call to action, and to me that's like the most important thing you should have on your site, that could be something when you think about how that relates to the digital world, like having a ebook available for download, a white paper, mm-hmm. Something, your phone number there. If you're a doctor's office, your phone number should be right there, bright for people to call and make appointments. So call to action. I would say the other thing would be having the important information you want people to see above the fold. Right. So what that means above the fold is mm-hmm. when someone opens up a website and they see your homepage on their screen, whatever you want people to see, they should be able to see before they have to scroll down. So right. that's above the fold.
Mm.
And if you think about the third thing, I would say just having content, keeping your website updated so it's not static, but it's actually dynamic, and you've got information to keep people coming back to it. That keeps you relevant. And that's pretty important when it comes to things like search engine optimization mm-hmm. and so on.
All those fancy technical terms that, you know, freak me out. Now, why is it important to market digitally but maintain that traditional presence as well?
Yep. So our company philosophy is you can't really have one without the other. Mm. Don't exist in a vacuum. You still need to, let's say you make contacts with people on LinkedIn. You find people through Facebook and Twitter and so on. What's better than actually tying that name or that Twitter mm-hmm. handle to an actual face when you meet people at an actual event, when you mm. actually have a table, when mm-hmm. you actually still do some traditional things like put out a press release and make sure right. you're still getting newspaper coverage or magazine coverage. So those things are pretty important to keep tied together. You can still, of course, tie that into digital campaigns, but they need to be married to each other. One strategy needs to exist with the other. Mm-hmm.
How important is simplicity in all of this? Because I know some of us are "quote unquote" technically challenged. I mean, I'm old school, you know, mm-hmm. and I used to sit around and think,
"Old school, not old, right?"
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and I used to sit around and think, "How did we survive before all of this?" You know, so
yeah.
But you know, how does simplicity work into this? Basically,
so here's what I would say. Okay. You've developed your brand, let's just say. Mm-hmm. After you develop your brand, and I'm thinking, again, your messaging, your website's up, so it's kind of the foundation of your digital presence, then to keep it simple, rather than jumping on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Pinterest, YouTube, all of them at one time, keep it simple. Choose just one. Master one. So if you love to write, become good at blogging, mm-hmm. and then take those blog articles and push them out on other networks like mm-hmm. E-zines. You could send it out there. There's a ton of other websites you could take your articles and repurpose them and put them out there. And so maybe you're the king of blogs, and that's how you keep it simple.
I just think of blogging as a way of hearing myself talk only in words, you know, for someone who loves to talk.
Right.
You know,
so. Well, see, and then that's the thing. If you love to talk, you take that same blog article and make recordings, turn it into a podcast, or do it on video. Mm-hmm. And then that launches you into the next social network. So maybe it's iTunes and you're getting distributed through podcasts, or maybe it's YouTube and you're on video. So you can branch from one to the other, mm-hmm. but keep it simple by just doing one at a time, unless you're in a position to hire maybe a firm that can manage a lot of that stuff for you and really work closely for you. But if you're doing it on your own, yeah. just start with one at a time, take it slow and easy, get good at it, and keep it going.
Yeah, because it's very easy to get overwhelmed.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And that's one thing that I did with my newsletter article. Mm-hmm. I would put it on my blog, and then I sent it to E-zine articles or submityouarticles.com, yeah. and it went all over the web,
yep.
and then yeah, turned a few of those into the YouTube things, but it's a ton of work if you're doing it solo.
It
so
is.
That one at a time is smart advice.
Slow and easy.
Slow and easy.
Now, why should, well, obviously we know why businesses should invest in social media. I mean, that's kind of a given. But is there kind of a benchmark of how much is a good amount to invest if, you know, you're talking to somebody that doesn't have a big corporate budget?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing I love about social media is that with pay-per-click advertising, you can determine what you want that budget to be. Mm-hmm. So the magic number, there is not one, because it's going to depend on what your objectives are as a business owner. And really your bottom line, what's in your budget, what's affordable. Mm-hmm. But what I can say is if you take, for example, something like Facebook advertising, mm-hmm. you could say, okay, I want my budget to be $50 per month. Create the ad, and maybe you just do one or two ads, just the variation of, you know, mm-hmm. one particular ad that you choose, and that's just where you cap it. And maybe you measure that, because Facebook ads is going to give you some analytics. It's going to tell you how many people clicked on your ad. It's going to tell you how right. many fans you got from it. And so that'll give you a good read on whether or not what you're doing is effective. But even if you're doing something like a Facebook ad and you're investing money in it, you need to have something attached to it that actually makes someone want to buy your product or service. Mm-hmm. So if you're running that Facebook ad and you got $50 out there, I mean, what is your objective? Do you just want to get likes to mm-hmm. your fan page? Or do you actually have a landing page within your Facebook fan page that takes someone to buy your book or buy your CD mm-hmm. or download something for free so you get their email address? Okay. Those are some of the things you could put in place to see your return.
That's really interesting, and yeah. I didn't even realize. I mean, I've done a few Facebook ads, but obviously I don't know what I'm doing because I've blown through $25 in less than a day.
Yeah, so. And you can set limits. You can tell it, look, I don't want it to go past $10 today, and when it hits $10, your ad's just not going to show up anymore.
Right, okay, so yeah, I got to figure out how to...
So you, one of the things that you're saying is, as a business, you know, you open your doors, you're going to have a website. We always tell people now, if you don't have a website, you're not in business. And then knowing how to be... Everybody, we were just talking about to a partner last night about alliance partnerships and knowing what your limits are and then knowing how to create that marketing. Marketing has changed so much, even in the last 5 years.
Oh, yeah. It has. It changed a ton. And, yeah, you've got to look for ways to just leverage everything that you're doing. That's how you're going to get the most. If you're kind of stretched and you're kind of bootstrapping and you're limited on your budget and what you can do, you've got to look for ways. But, again... Don't just start running out and doing it. Develop a strategy first. Take that approach. Know your brand. Develop the messaging.
Don't just throw money out there. No. Facebook ads. Woohoo.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, and like you said, Stacey, have that website as a foundation to everything that you're doing because it truly is.
Well, you know, and on top of that, you know, it's easy to put something out to say, you know, this is what we do or this is what we have. And this is how we do it. But really, do you think people are buying why you do what you do?
I think, again, goes back to messaging, goes back to how do you want to be perceived? How are you putting the information out there? So, again, I go back to the brand. Develop that brand first.
And I presume that that's one of the challenges you guys have is consistently, because you guys not only work with small businesses, but you also work with nonprofits, right?
Yeah. We've done some work with nonprofits. Yeah, and the message for one versus the other is different. You know, how we work with a nonprofit is going to be much different than the business owner who's very aggressive. They're putting a lot of money out there, and they want things to work a certain way. So, yeah, it can be a challenge, but, yeah, it's definitely got to be tailored to who you're working with. And we work with larger corporations on the experiential marketing side of our business. The message to them is going to be much different than it is to the small business owner. The way we work with them, the way we look at budgets and returns and even doing analytics and looking at, you know, how does this make sense? How does this affect your bottom line? It's always going to be different.
Wow. It's amazing.
That is.
Now, I know you also mentioned some free resources for small businesses to start digital impact.
Yeah. So, all right. So this will kind of help with Roger. You asked the question earlier. How do you keep it simple, right?
Okay.
So, okay, let's say you are that small business owner and you're thinking, how can I manage Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff in one place? A lot of people use something called Hootsuite.
Oh, I love Hootsuite.
Yeah. And I'm going to spell it for those who haven't heard of it. Hootsuite.com, Hootsuite. It's web-based. There's a free version. I think the paid version is like $5 a month, so it's not too much to give up. But that's a great tool to manage multiple social media networks.
Well, isn't that a hoot?
Yeah.
So I'm usually the one delivering the corny one-liners.
I know, yeah.
Weather changes. I start. Things just change with me. So okay.
It's starting to feel like winter finally.
Yes.
So Hootsuite's a good one. Another one for email marketing campaigns, MailChimp.
Oh,
I love MailChimp, right? The little chimp sits there and gives you little wise cracks all day when you're sending out your email campaigns. But that wise chimp, MailChimp is free for up to 2,000 contacts in your database. So I highly encourage business owners, get MailChimp. Don't send emails out from your Gmail account to your database.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you.
Is that mail as in M-A-I-L? Or?
Yeah, M-A-I-L, MailChimp.com.
Okay.
And I'll give you one that's a little bit more advanced. And this one has a free trial. It does have a fee attached to it. But for someone who's a little bit more advanced, recommend.ly. And it's recommend.ly. It's a great resource to use if you already have a Facebook fan page and you want to start analyzing what's the best time for me to post. And it gives you daily recommendations on what you can do to improve that fan page to get more engagement.
Well, I'll just stick with the chimps and the hoots right now. Okay, and then I'll recommend later.
There we go.
And how often do you recommend a small business to reinvent them, rebrand themselves, that kind of stuff? A couple times a year, once a year? I mean, we're getting towards the end of the year. We know a lot of businesses are revamping their business plan, marketing strategies.
I think at least once a year. And yeah, we are at the end of the year, but as a business, you probably should have started planning for a lot of this stuff, probably starting back in September, October. Mm-hmm. Use that as the planning time frame mm-hmm. to think about, okay, what am I going to do when January launches, if that's how you're running your fiscal mm-hmm. year. Use that time to do a research and to start building your budget so that if you're using some of these tools are free, but some of them might have a fee associated, come up with all that stuff early. Mm-hmm. If you're going to invest in Facebook advertising, come up with how much you're going to spend on that early. And then that'll help you start to kind of get an idea of, okay, what do I want to do? And when it comes to reinventing your brand, all that's a part of it. And so, again, you're looking at your budget. You're looking at what kind of tools am I going to use. So those are all factors that play a part in it.
So you've grown your business for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. How has that affected the economics and that kind of stuff for you guys?
It's helped tremendously. I mean, and we do a mix. I mean, we kind of practice what we preach. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty big out there. We use Facebook a lot. What one thing and one network I feel like is very underutilized is LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn now, we've optimized and grown our profiles to the point where we're getting leads every single day.
Yeah, I like
really?
It. I
yeah.
really like LinkedIn.
We are big fans of LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And especially we notice a lot of small businesses don't do a LinkedIn for their business. They do it for the owner. We're like, there's a separation there. Don't you feel that that's really important?
Absolutely. And here's the other thing, because I get requests occasionally from people who are using a LinkedIn personal profile, mm-hmm. but they're using it as their business.
Right, exactly.
It's a pet peeve. I will not accept them.
Oh, good point. Good point. I like that.
So make sure you go under the company section in LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is really doing a lot. They're actually about to completely roll out the way profiles are being done. Mm-hmm. But the company pages, you can add video. You can add a description of your products and services. If you have people, employees that are connected to your business on LinkedIn, you can add them as contact people under the LinkedIn company page. So, I mean, it is so underutilized. And even with a personal profile, you hear the term keywords. Mm-hmm. Make sure whatever it is you do for a living, whatever industry you're in, make sure those keywords are throughout your entire LinkedIn profile. So if you are a marketing consultant, social media consultant, that's how people find me on LinkedIn. It's all over my profile. It's in my employment experience. It's in the titles. It's everywhere.
It's the new resume.
It absolutely is.
It is like the virtual resume out there.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to accept people on LinkedIn. I mean, connect with people. That's what it's all about.
I agree. Because I there's somebody I have been connecting with for quite a while. Now he's calling, asking some defined questions about what we really do mm-hmm. that was great resource in that perspective.
Yep. It turns into a real relationship.
It does.
You get on the phone, and then if you're in the same market, there's an opportunity to meet face-to-face.
I've actually found some people that I was in the military with my first duty assignment back in 1981, and it just, for some reason or other, I decided to just query his name on LinkedIn, and sure enough, there he is.
Yeah.
You know, and so I reached out to him, so now we've kind of, we're rekindling that relationship we had back in 82.
Yeah,
and he owns a small business. And the one thing I have to say, though, LinkedIn is easier to find a male's name because they don't change their names, where the females, it's a little more challenging sometimes if they've gotten married. Like, I think some people put hyphens or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that. So, Sonia, if I'm a business, how would I get a hold of you? Email, website, social media?
All of the above. I get tweets, so you're welcome to tweet me. My Twitter account's just at Sonia Crystal, but our company is at Go Getter Group. Email-wise, info@gogettergroup.com. Quick and easy. We check it every day, so that's an easy way to get a hold. And my phone number's on the website. So our website's www.gogettergroup.com.
Well, thank you. You shared a lot of information. I'm sure we could sit here for another hour talking about marketing.
I know.
It's marketing is very key.
Yeah.
So, Stephen.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So, tell us what you do with your company.
Basically, I sit in meetings like this and learn a lot from other people.
I like that job.
I was going to say, it's awesome.
My background is I'm an Atlanta native. Went away to college, came back, and began work as a CPA with an international accounting firm. Built a regional firm after that I recently sold to my younger partners so that I could go into two other areas. So we have the accounting firm that does external reporting to tax authorities and to banks. The business that I'm currently running is called Trusted CFO Solutions. Mm-hmm. And what it is a digital CFO service that simplifies the way people do business, takes the burden of their back office off of them, and gives them the kind of dashboard reporting that they have not been able to get in the past because it was too expensive. Mm. Technology is a wonderful thing.
Yes, and it is.
In the same respect that we now have social media and ways to find people all over the world, and even follow Justin Bieber and be a Bieber follower.
Oh, no.
Don't tell me you have Bieber fever.
Yeah.
But in the same way, technology has also impacted the way people do business. If we go back into the old days, a lot of businesses outsourced their accounting to CPA firms that did their payroll, wrote their checks, mm-hmm. reconciled their banks, and gave them a financial statement at the end of the month. It morphed into doing it yourself when microcomputers and programs like QuickBooks and others showed up, where people could do an awful lot of that work for themselves in their office. Unfortunately, a good thing going bad is that as businesses grew, suddenly their closets filled up with a lot of boxes with lights shining off and on, and suddenly there are 20 of these microcomputers running around the office, and somebody had to keep them going, so they hired IT staff.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've got IT staff, they've got bookkeepers, they've got controllers, they've got CFOs, all of them running around trying to keep things going. And the owner, all he cares about is how much cash do I have in the bank,
or
any of my customers past due. Do I need to, are my marketing campaigns effective? And he goes back to his back office or financial reporting group, and they say, well, we're another week away from closing out last month's books. We'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm.
So he's disconnected with what's happening in his business, and it makes it harder for him to actually run his business.
Right.
What we've done is taken technology that used to be only available for big companies, brought it down to the level where anyone can use it today. And now it's a question of all of it living in the cloud, having digital information available instantly, having your bank account always reconciled, having financials always available, and not having to worry about paperwork. Everything's digital. Mm-hmm. Your file cabinets are digital. Your financial reports are digital. And when you're driving in your car or on vacation or in your second home, you're looking over your business in real time anytime you want. So if bills are stacking up back at the office, they show up in email, and you take a look at them and approve them for payment, or approve the timing that they get paid, and it automatically happens. Online banking, online financial reporting, nothing slows down. So you're detached from being held captive to your office. You're detached from being held captive to your back office processes. It's a much simpler world. And it's allowing many companies, and I'm seeing this all over the place, where you have talented individuals in Atlanta, New York, San Francisco, Chicago, that have their customer bases. They have a manufacturing representative that works with them in China. And those five people are it. They mm-hmm. have no other office space, no other business, and they're doing $20, $30, $50 million a year
wow.
with no administrative central office that they have to support.
Less overhead.
Much less overhead.
Okay, so, I mean, that's totally fascinating, but I will admit I got it all together to take home with me during the holidays so I can try to reconcile my books. I've got the manila envelopes stuffed full of receipts. So how did these digital files eliminate that problem?
Well, let's start with the simple process of you getting your mail.
Okay,
you get your mail, comes in, three-quarters of it's junk, a quarter right. of it you have to deal with,
mm-hmm.
put it off to the side, wait till tomorrow.
Right.
Then tomorrow, the stack's gotten bigger,
right.
so you go through and you go, God.
So, yeah, you've been in my office, obviously.
So all of that is a process of touching again,
right.
touching again. And then when you're really organized, you put them in different files. To be paid next week, to be paid 2 weeks out, to
so
be paid a month.
So you've been in my file cabinet, too.
I so, think you've been into everybody's file cabinet at this point, you know?
So that's basically how things are working in a normal environment.
Right.
And if you have a business, just multiply what you're doing times 10 or 20 people, and everybody's doing the same thing. Mm. What this looks like is that when information comes in, whether it's by mail or by email or by any other, by fax, it is immediately processed into your back office platform. So open up the mail, see a bill, you scan it. Once you scan it, you don't touch it again. And it moves through the process of operating your business without ever having to touch that piece of paper a second time. And it moves through orderly. It goes from, we just scanned it, and now the program reads what's on it and says, okay, this is an invoice to Acme, whatever, and it's due on the 10th, and we'll get a discount if we pay it, and this is the amount, this is what it was for. So the first thing it does is it says, okay, who needs to look at this to say that this is a good invoice, that we need to pay it? And so it comes to your email, and you say, yep, I ordered that. That is a valid bill, and we should put it in line to be paid. So you hit accept on your smartphone, and it then goes to the person who is looking at the checkbook to say, do we have any money in there? Can we pay it? And he says, well, we're going to pay it, but it doesn't look like Thursday's a good day. How about next week? So he sets it up to be paid next week. From that point, it gets paid automatically through the bank, posted to the accounting records. That invoice is now part of the accounting process so that any entry into your accounting system is backed up by a source document. So you can double-click down through it and see what you're paying and what your bills are. Now, here's the valuable part. All of that simplifies. Okay, simplification is the first goal. The second is virtualization, which means that all of this can be done from anywhere.
Wow.
So you're suddenly detached from your office. So you can have remote workers, partners in other cities, employees in other cities. No one skips a beat. So the first thing you do is automate, then you virtualize. The third step is transformation. And transformation is where you're getting information that's important to your business, whatever that information is. And you can say, I want to see my sales per day, or in a restaurant, I want to see my covers per night. I want to see the average check amount. I want to see how many, you know, what the dispersion of food versus liquor was. Whatever those key performance indicators are, every morning or whenever you tell it to, it'll tell you last night was X, Y, Z. And it will give you that information in a dashboard that you have designed because it's the information you want to know.
Right.
Whether it's daily, weekly, monthly, it really doesn't matter. Those dashboards are now much easier to design so you can be on top of things. You may have a business that's been in business for 10 years, and you have a pattern. You can see steady growth up to 2007. Then you saw it drop off the cliff, and now you're struggling back.
Right.
But you want to see those trends. You want to see the trends of income or revenue. You want to see the trends of gross margin. You want to see your receivable aging period. You know, how old are those accounts receivables getting? Right. So you've got 45 days, 45 days, 42 days, 40 days. Good trend.
Right, right.
But when you see 45 days, 48 days, 55 days, 70 days,
there's a problem.
You're going to have a cash flow issue. So you need to see that as it happens, not wait a month, then 2 weeks later for somebody to fix the numbers. You need to see it as it happens. All of that's part of what we call the digital CFO world now.
I mean, that's just incredible. I mean, and totally invaluable for any business of any size, especially a small business that's trying to do it all themselves. Now, you mentioned that the cost of this is much more affordable than it was, but
let's look at cost for a second, because one of the misconceptions I have in the that I'm seeing in the marketplace is people go, well, gosh, I'm paying $300 a year for QuickBooks, and this is much more than that. And I say, okay, you're comparing apples to oranges. This is not a software. This is a process. So if you adopt a digital platform and you have a CFO full-time, a controller full-time, mm-hmm. a receivable clerk, a payable clerk, full-time. What you actually might need in your business is a little bit of a CFO, mm-hmm. a little bit of a controller.
Right.
More of the receivable and payable. Mm-hmm. But if you looked at what your business actually needed, it would be much less in terms of the actual right. overhead mm-hmm. than to have full-time people. Mm-hmm. But there is not a ready market for 25% controllers
right.
or 50% right. CFOs. So if you're on a platform like this, you can design the way your business works mm-hmm. in an all-in cost that is much less than the cost of people, the right. cost of hardware, the cost of software. And, you know, all in, it becomes much more effective and efficient cost-wise.
Yeah, exactly, especially when you're talking about software and the fact of, you know, licensing and upgrades and all of this stuff, you know. I mean, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know. And to your point, you know, you mentioned one of my favorite words is simplicity and efficiency on top of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things is it's not about the cost, it's the return on investment is mm-hmm. what you're really talking about.
Right.
Absolutely.
The return on investment in your business. It could turn multiple folds. And one of the things that you said was process. And, you know, Myra and all of us talk about process in government contracting. You know, we have some clients that they just get to that cusp of winning that contract, but then they have no process of that controller or the CFO, mm-hmm. those kind of things. So how would you go into a business that's kind of already established some parts and pieces that to get what you do completely?
It doesn't have to be an all-or-nothing process. Okay. There are definitely modules to this that you can adopt over time.
Mm-hmm.
So what we normally recommend is to have someone with the skill sets to come in and assess your business, take a look at what you're doing, how you're doing it, what you're getting from it, and how timely it is and how accurate it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of looking at that, not judging it, but just looking at it, we can tell you what processes aren't doing what they should be doing
right.
or are too burdensome and costly to continue doing it that way
mm-hmm.
and suggest a streamlined way of doing what you do using some minor technology tweaks, but make it work better and more effectively.
So is that like an assessment that they come in and that's a fee to
yes.
kind of do the overview basically?
What we do is we'll come in and do the assessment for a fixed fee, so it doesn't matter how complicated it is. And it will be money back guarantee. So we'll do the assessment, do the report, and if you feel like it has not created value for you, you don't pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But what it usually leads to is then a decision on the businessman's part. Okay, I know where we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a new sense of where we should be.
Right.
We know where we are.
Right.
Let's look at the how and the timetable for
right.
the how.
Mm-hmm.
And then do it in steps mm-hmm. and stages so that everyone's comfortable.
Right.
One of the breakdowns that I've seen over the years is when people move from something to something different, they hire somebody, they go through what they call an implementation,
mm-hmm.
which means finishing this, starting that, clicking it on, and then they say, you're on your
you're
own.
Done.
Yeah.
Yes. Woo-hoo.
Okay, so the implementations almost always fail mm-hmm. unless you accompany it with what we call integration.
Mm-hmm.
Integration right. is, okay, now it's different. Let's do it different. I know it's uncomfortable. If you have a question, let's go through it, and we'll show you why.
Mm-hmm.
And you stay with it until everyone's doing it and comfortable doing it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's been integrated into the business, mm-hmm. and everybody's okay with the new way, and they also buy into the benefits.
Right.
At the end of the day, process isn't important unless you're getting something better than you got before. Mm-hmm.
So that's where the tie-in is here, Sonia. This is actually really good. So that both of you guys talk about that process, but implementation integration is huge.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that affecting 2013 for your businesses out there?
Well, first of all, this is what I would call a disruptive technology. And disruptive technologies right. are always mm-hmm. resisted before they're embraced.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many people. Jeffrey Moore has done what I call a technology adoption curve. And what happens is that in the first stages, when the technology shows itself, you have the early adopters,
right.
the geeks like me that go, oh boy, a new toy.
Gotta have it.
Gotta have it. Gotta have it. And then the early adopters mm-hmm. follow, mm-hmm. and they get involved mm-hmm. in it, and then suddenly it stops. There's a chasm where the early adopters are doing it, first responders are doing it, but the rest of the market really hasn't said, okay, we got to have it.
Right,
they're waiting. They're waiting. Yeah. They don't want to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They don't want to do something different. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. You know,
and that takes a while for it to bleed over and right. for the early adopters to go, I'm running rings around you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're a nitwit doing it that way.
Yeah.
Right. Look at what I can do, and you can't do it. And
right.
over time, that frustration with not doing it the better way
right.
starts bringing in what we then call the early majority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the group that says, okay, it's proven, it's mm-hmm. solid. Those guys are using it, and they're beating my brains out. I'd better get into the right. game and mm-hmm. do it. Then you have those that resist change.
No matter what.
But the groundswell in their company says, okay, I got to do it. It's been around long enough. I guess it's not dangerous now. And they ultimately wind up getting to it. So I think that right now we're in that early stage where if we're not out of the chasm, we're still mm-hmm. in it waiting for the majority to come right. into it. However, what that does is creates an enormous opportunity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
There is a tsunami of change mm-hmm. that will happen, and it's a question of being on top of it and being valuable in mm-hmm. that process in the same way marketing is.
Yeah.
When you're out there, you're doing it, people know you're doing it, and doing it well, eventually they'll come in droves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Definitely.
And you're just so positioned to take advantage of that when that late majority finally wakes up and, you know, I guess this is the new thing.
And it's a better thing. The new thing part, I thought back in the days when I was doing merger and acquisition work, I was doing 13-column worksheets, and I'd fill in all the forecasts and the projections, and then someone would come and say, oh, by the way, that number wasn't quite right. So I'd start erasing have to refoot everything. I thought it was magic when VisiCalc showed up as the first spreadsheet program.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, it adds rows and columns. God save me. And then Lotus 1-2-3 had extra bells and whistles. And finally Excel showed up, and now Excel's magic in its own. But too many people are taking limited back office systems like QuickBooks or Peachtree mm-hmm. or Mass 90, or there are hundreds of them, and none of it is providing what they need to run their business. So mm-hmm. they put all that information over into Excel and then start doing meaningful things mm. for their business.
Right.
That's just a whole lot more work. It doesn't need to work that way. Not anymore.
Now, one question, because you did mention all this is cloud-based. So how secure is all of this sensitive information?
It's a question we get quite a bit. And most of the platforms that we're dealing with are what we call PCS3 compliant, meaning that in the data rooms that house the information, you have to have retina scans, you have to have fingerprint scans. You don't get in there unless it's like going into Fort Knox, mm. and their backup systems, their protection systems are truly amazing. Whenever I'm asked that by a client, I say, what are you doing today? and he says, well, we've got a really pretty sophisticated operation at the office. I said, how do you back up your information? He says, well, my IT guy has this thing he calls tape backup. Mm-hmm. So every night he backs up on a tape all of our information from the servers, and he puts it in his car, and he takes it home to his apartment.
Oh.
Oh, goodness.
And then the next day comes in and brings
more secure than that.
And I'm going, oh, God, help me. So I contend that any on-premise network can be hacked mm-hmm. by a teenager.
Right.
And mm-hmm. the backup is almost non-existent.
Right.
And far less disaster recovery. Mm-hmm. Let's assume for a second that a tornado came through here and shredded all these buildings up and down Abernathy. Mm. How long would it take you to be back up on your network?
I have no
days, weeks.
Days or weeks, like the people like in Sandy, right? The Hurricane Sandy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're still not up.
No.
If you're in the cloud, you're up 15 minutes later.
Wow.
So it's a far better solution.
Mm.
Wow, that's amazing. And to see the tie-in between what you do versus what Sonia does in the marketing aspect, it's great.
It fits together.
I think so, yeah.
We have had to become familiar with social marketing and mm-hmm. our social media as another way of communication.
Right.
And we use some powerful presentation tools, one of which we stole from the classroom. And what really amazed me is that our kids are much more technology proficient than we are.
Yes.
They've got iPads, they've got smartphones, and they've got something called smart boards in their mm-hmm. classrooms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There are two vendors, one called Smart Board, one called Promethean. And these are basically 90-inch iPads up on a wall.
Yeah. Wow.
And they do courseware, they do video conferencing. In the Promethean world, which we live in, 65,000 lesson plans have been recorded on the Promethean world website.
Wow.
They have been downloaded 24 million times.
Wow.
And there are 2 million of these boards in classrooms around the country. So we're now using that technology in business mm-hmm. to do financial presentations, yep. video conferencing, mm-hmm. review documents and yellow line
right.
with a group around. We introduced it to Home Depot, who had been basically doing their advertising edits. They would get all of the advertising proofs mm-hmm. for products from their ad company. They would paste them on the wall around a conference room, and then everyone would come in that had something to say, and they'd give them a different color magic marker.
Yeah.
And they'd make their little notes on the mm-hmm. each picture, and they'd walk around the room
yeah.
until they finally finished. Then they'd take them, unstick them, put them on a pile, FedEx them back to their advertising agency.
Wow.
And that was last month. This right. is not ancient history. Mm-hmm. So we showed them one of these Promethean boards, and they went, "You mean four people can stand up there on the board and edit at the same time? You mean we can be editing a digital image and making our notations on it? You mean we could be emailing it back to the advertising mm-hmm, agency right. when we're done
yeah.
and copying okay. everybody in the room at the same time?" They went, "Magic. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Digital world."
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's the beauty yeah. of the cloud.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to your point, and when it comes to you mentioned, you know, the in the schools and the teaching aspect of it, you would think that something like this would improve, and I'll go ahead and say it, improve our graduation rates that are seem to be lagging throughout the country in schools. And I'm not so sure that people are really paying attention to that.
Another topic for another day, but I don't contend that the technology is a limiting factor in classrooms. I think it's more the curricula and the culture of parent-teacher and how they support
Absolutely.
The kids going there and in being involved in what they learn. I think the classrooms are very well equipped and
yeah.
are getting better equipped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So totally fascinating information for any business owner that you know is looking to kind of step up their game and move to that next wave or the not necessarily the new way of doing business, I think, is what this is. How does somebody get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
First of all, you can go on the web, and Stephen Gross, CPA, is kind of like pasted up there like on bathroom walls. I mean, you'll get all kind of hits if you go to Stephen Gross, CPA. But the business name is TrustedCFOSolutions.com,
okay.
and that will introduce you to this digital back office platform. The accounting firm is hlbgrosscollins.com, and you can see what traditional CPAs do in that world. And our third business is Gross Capital, grosscap.com, and that's where we raise money for businesses that need capital infusions and debt infusions.
Okay.
So any of those places, we live in a lot of places, as well as the radio show and the seminar.
I was going to say, I thought you did a radio show too. What's that? Yeah,
that's called The Gross Reality, and you can download previous broadcasts on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, outstanding.
Awesome. So I think we had a couple of fascinating folks just talking about digital and how everything mm-hmm. is all moving to the cloud and getting us ready for the next
phase of business. For 2013.
Yeah.
I think it's all about innovation. You've got to be thinking innovation.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Because in this day and age, like Steve says, you could have a business partner in California and then your production could be in China, but how do you keep stats on that, that kind of stuff.
How you visit with each other. Yeah. Have you weekly meetings on video?
Yeah.
Using Skype, using GoToMeeting, using WebEx.
LiveMinutes.com. Well, there's a couple of them we've been using that we use with our clients. But, yeah, I think that's kind of the new age of business, is that you're not having the storefront per se, but you're having a virtual storefront, you know?
Correct.
So I guess the key message here is innovate, integrate, and implementate. If that's a word,
that could be a Roger Vaughnism.
That's not a word.
That is an Urban Dictionary.
Yeah.
I like Wikipedia. Either way. Okay. Well, great. It's been an absolute pleasure of having both of you on, Stephen, Sonia.
Thank you.
Thank you for so much information, great information. And like I said, they've given out all the information out. So for those of you out there listening, please play it back and get all the information there that they have. But that being said, join us each week as we do talk about what makes business ownership so rewarding as it relates to challenges of running a small business and ultimately why you choose to do so. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Happy holidays, and we'll see you later.